95.1 The Buzz. Daria's Entertainment Guide.
A long time ago, my ex-boyfriend and I had asked our friends Jess and Corey if they wanted to go out of town over the weekend. They couldn't because long before that, they had made plans for that, or rather, that particular weekend with their friends Ian and Virginia to go to Hasita Head Lighthouse to stay at the lighthouse keeper's house, which had been converted into a bed and breakfast. But then Jess called early that Friday afternoon. "Do you and the ex-boyfriend want to come with us to the lighthouse?" she asked. "Ian and Virginia can't come. Ian accidentally poisoned himself." What had happened? Well, I probably shouldn't say exactly what happened, as I didn't ask Ian if I could. But the essence was that he had a newly enhanced empathy for Mama Cass. And also, when the mayonnaise people say refrigerate after opening, they don't mean eventually. Ian's gastronomic misfortune would be our benefit. "Hooray, yes," I told Jess and called the ex-boyfriend at work to tell him the good news. "It's a what now?" he asked after a pause, long enough to convey to me, in no uncertain terms, he was anything but excited. "Okay," he said. I said, rather, "a bed and breakfast, but I have a lot of work to do this weekend," sighed the ex-boyfriend. He was referring to a grad school project he had known about forever. "You were talking all week," I said, "about how you might go fishing over the weekend with Dobson." "Oh," said the ex-boyfriend, "yeah, but I might not." So to regain my advantage, I countered with an extended phone silence of my own, only twice as long. "Okay, now you're mad," said the ex-boyfriend. "No, I'm not," I said, barely audible. "I'm just very disappointed." And we went back and forth like that for an inappropriate length of time. And it wasn't really a matter of someone winning or someone losing. But the next afternoon, we were on I-5 South, headed towards Florence, Oregon, and the bed and breakfast. Now, there is an art to pretending like you're having a good time, or even an okay time, when you're not. There is also an art to admitting you're not having a good time or an okay time when you're not. Ex-boyfriend cared for neither of these and consequently practiced not one nor the other, but rather was the Da Vinci of the art of declaring he was having a good time in a weird, tight alien voice of words of no more than one syllable, and that only because you couldn't have a word consisting of less than one, then driving silently with its jaw set for 3 hours, but for a loud, irritated noise directed at every car in front of him who had the misfortune not to realize 85 miles an hour was too slow for the fast lane. And you'll think, oh yeah, right, maybe especially if you're a guy, definitely especially if you're a guy who used to go out with me. But I swear to God, I was being very, very calm, patient, rational, and non-antagonizing. Even though he was being 100% unreasonable. And I mean, was this really so terrible, going away to a beautiful place, which, by the way, had been prepaid with two people we were friends with? I suppose sitting at home watching TV would have been preferable, huh? Plus, the whole thing he claimed to hate most about going somewhere was the planning aspect, and he hadn't had to do any of that. But I mean, far be it from me to dwell on any of it. Or about the fact that we drove back and forth through Florence for a full half tank of gas due to the fact that ex-boyfriend had taken directions over the phone and in his indignation not bothered to add the words left or right. And you know how people get all indignant over generalized stereotypes, like Asian people being bad drivers or Middle Eastern people running convenience stores, or that women get irritable at a certain time right before they need to use cotton-based implements between their thigh and waistline, when everyone knows it's not during, it's right before, okay? I never, ever understood the whole, "Hey ladies, did you ever notice how men stop and refuse to ask for directions? What's up with that?" Second only to the toilet seat issue tagline. But I understand it now! Hasita Head Lighthouse is beautiful and has the claim made of it that it's the most photographed lighthouse in all of America. The lighthouse keeper's house is reputed to be haunted. In fact, super reputed to be haunted, with documentaries and books and testimonies and so on. This was, of course, a plus. The keeper's house is large and white and set out all by itself on sort of a flat bluff, all covered with grass overlooking the ocean, with an actual white picket fence all around the oversized yard, which has nothing in it, no trees or plants or bushes, at least not at that time, which made it look weird somehow. And also, just as I pictured coastal houses in Maine or Nova Scotia or other places on the northeast coast to look. And you could, without question and without trying very hard, easily picture maybe a partially transparent face peeking out from around a curtain in one of the upstairs windows, flat and unshuttered against the house. And then we went in the creaky back porch steps, through a little extra kitchen, and into the main entryway. And hey, free Jelly Belly beans were there! Woohoo! The house is divided into two sections, two full houses, actually, with what used to be the dividing wall taken out. Three bedrooms up the staircase on the lighthouse side, two bedrooms up the other staircase on the other end, which is where we were. We've talked to the owner, said Jess. He used to run Corgan's on Bybee and the Red House coffee place around the corner across from the post office. There are two ghosts here, John and Rue. Ruth, I said. Rue, R-U-E, said Jess, like McClanahan. Rue has been here in the house for decades, and John, they brought with them from their house in Portland. Did anything scary happen when you guys were here last night, I asked her. No, said Jess. Absolutely nothing, said Corgan. There was a whole lot of noise, crashing and thumping and windows rattling, but the house is on a bluff by the ocean with not one single wind-blocking object anywhere near it. And there are no storm windows, and the ones that there are loose, which could just maybe possibly account for, oh, I don't know, rattling and sudden chilly breezes. If by haunted they mean not winterized, then yeah, it's the freaking Winchester house. You're not going to believe how delicious breakfast is, though, said Jess. There's no TV in here, called ex-boyfriend from our room. And I didn't see one downstairs either. I don't know if it's haunted, but I'm pretty sure this place is evil. So I don't know if all the restaurants in Florence, where we drove to back down the road, are this way or are still this way. But the closest restaurant we found didn't serve alcohol, but they let you bring your own in. And maybe this is a very common thing, but man, what a good idea. And what unique satisfaction it is to have your food served to you and then say, don't mind if I do, and grab a round of Frosty Ones out of your Fred Meyer bag that you stashed under the table right there in front of the owner. And he smiles and says, let me open that for you. It's like the teacher slipping you the answers in class or something. So after dinner, pretty late, back at the keeper's house, we took the very short Blair Witchy walk through a little stretch of woods up a hill to the lighthouse itself, which was, close up, totally bizarre, like if Willy Wonka had begun construction on a UFO. Isn't it incredible? Asked Jess. I'm going to scale the sides, said ex-boyfriend. Oh, me too, said Corey. You are doing no such thing, said Jess. I'm so happy here. I'm so glad Ian accidentally poisoned himself, I said. Back inside, on our half of the house, we lit a fire. And since it was smoking time and I was trying to quit smoking, I could feel the monster fuss coming on. So I stretched myself out on the extra long dark red sofa because I hadn't heard the story of the sofa yet. And I hooked my ankles on the backrest part and leaned over so my head was on the floor. This position, if you're trying to picture it, is not comfortable, but it suspends my tantrums. The room and the visible room beyond, I noticed from this position, were festooned with three primary motifs of tchotchke. Lighthouse things, angels, and somewhat inexplicably, Santa. It was not close to Christmas. There needs to be, I said, with a rush of the sudden clarity that comes with all the blood rushing to your head, an evil bed and breakfast, made up like the Addams Family house with layers of dust and cobwebs and all decorated, instead of with, like, doilies and little angel and lighthouse figures, like little skulls and devils, said Jess, catching right on and jumping right in, as is her lovely way. And you could employ people, I said, whose whole entire job would be to just hang out in the attic and then suddenly scream as loud as they could. Or maybe one guy to just run through the halls in the middle of the night and throw somebody's bedroom door open and go, ah! And as proprietor, when a guest said hello to you, instead of saying hi and telling them about the history of the place and hoping they were comfortable, you could just stare right past them and put a hand on their chest and shove them out of your way, or just act insane and they would like it. And at breakfast, said Jess, there'd be this freakishly long table in a room with like tall, dark, grimy windows with all black, tattered curtains. And instead of the owner's cats or a little dog running around, there'd be a tank of spiders or snakes. Or no, a huge iron bird cage full of rats or bats. And you'd have everyone sit at the table, I said. And you'd wake them up to come to breakfast whenever you felt like it, like 3:45 in the morning. And when they were all seated, you'd say, so, where is everybody from? And when they started to do the thing where you go around the table and answer, you just yell, silence! And have your waiter, slave, Igor person serve breakfast. And breakfast would be like pork chops and vodka, offered Corey. I would totally, totally stay in that bread and breakfast, said Jess. So would I. Oh my God, I said. So would I, said Corey. Would there be a TV there? Asked ex-boyfriend. In the morning, Mike Corrigan, the owner, instructed everyone to sit boy-girl, and the two other couples staying there at the same time were like our parents' age, and it seemed very weird, and they only talked to each other, and it was like being a kid while the grown-ups were talking, but seven courses of breakfast were brought out. Seven courses! Each prefaced by elaborate commentary by Mike, and it was like magic. By the end, we were all hollering and laughing and sharing just a little too much about our personal lives, which, okay, I do every day for my job, but not face-to-face with people. Pound cake came out, this massive fruit plate, tiny bagels with homemade cream cheese, homemade berry jam, and homemade Nutella, fresh lox, then raspberry crepes with creme fraiche, this cranberry sorbet, white chocolate smoothie yogurt thing, spinach and goat cheese and mushroom frittata, thick, fresh slices of fried ham. It was around this point that the 50-plus-year-old lady cop, like out of nowhere, on a flavor high, blurted out, Lance and I here have done it in every room in this house! Okay, that was a complete non sequitur, and we all cheered and had more coffee. And then a cake made of honey and almond paste, and huge, fresh strawberries with white chocolate glaze you could dip them in. Then, we were all too full to move, so Mike took the opportunity to tell us about John and Rue, the ghosts. Many stories, many, many stories, punctuated by many repetitions of the fact that Rue's presence could be known by the fact that she carried with her a strong scent of feminine flowery perfume, and that the ghostly spirit of John resided inside that long red sofa and had come via said sofa from the Corrigan's old house to the inn. We finally hauled our carbo-laden hides upstairs to pack to go. So, sweetie, I said to ex-boyfriend, you didn't have too bad a time, did you? I mean, you think you hate bed and breakfasts, but this was fun, right? Didn't you think so? It was fun, right? I was on the floor, I might add, folding clothes. Ex-boyfriend was standing next to me, putting things into a backpack on a chair, and his succinct response to my questioning was to cut one. Long, low, loud, and farty. Oh my God, I shouted, leaping away. Honey, shush, he said. I think I sense the flowery presence of Rue. Acedia Head Lighthouse Inn is about 3 hours from Portland and pretty easy to get to. The best place to get directions would be their website, which said at one time that they only had 3 rooms, not 5, but it hadn't been updated for a whole long time. Acedia is spelled H-E-C-E-T-A. While directions are there, prices are not. And when we went, it was between about $150 and $200, and just about worth that for the food alone. But you know, easy for me to say, thanks again so much for this sandwich was only out on the counter 7 or 8 hours. I bet it's still good, Ian. You can call for reservations or with questions, 541-547-3696. I don't expect you to write that down. The number, of course, is on the website too. Plus, if all of you remember the code word frittata and you drive there in a reasonable manner and ask for directions if you get lost, you can all stay one night for free at my evil bed and breakfast when it's up and running. The Jelly Bellies will not be free, however. They will cost you your immortal soul. Except for the peanut butter and the black licorice. I don't like those. You can have them. This was your local entertainment guide on 105.1 The Buzz.